You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio, and it is time for Out of the Box, one of KKCR's great call-in shows.
One of the premier call-in shows here at KKCR.
September 5th, 2013.
2013.
And
is it really September already?
It is.
Wow.
And...
wow, it snuck up on me.
The opinions expressed during this program did not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its board, underwriters, volunteers, or members.
That's right. Well, let's see. Out of the Box is here from 4 to 6, and we've got a great show lined up. I'm your host, Dave Giroux.
I'm your co-host, Jonathan Jay.
Jonathan Jay here in the studio. So let's see. We're going to be talking about some of the big issues happening around the world for the first half hour. Then we're going to get into a discussion on with the Mana March.
Yeah, the Mana March. Big events here on Kauai.
Big of having Sunday. And then let's see. Then we've got Mel Raposo calling in discussing the GMO right to know bill.
Right. And he's on the
2491, is that what it's called?
Yeah, 2491. He's on the subcommittee that the bill is presently in right now. And we're hoping that on September 9th that that committee will return it back to the committee of the whole. So we'll find out from Mel what's going on in that subcommittee and his views and his hopes and aspirations for a healthy Kauai.
Right, and then later we will be discussing with a lawyer from the
Earth Justice
yeah. Organization.
Yeah, Paul Achitoff. He's the head attorney of the Hawaii office.
And he'll be talking about their offer to represent the county if they are sued. If they implement this bill.
Yeah, and, you know, communities' right for self-determination and self-rule, home rule, local home rule, because this is not just something that's happening here on Kauai, you know, where the county and the local levels had to step up to protect the health and safety of its citizens. This kind of thing is happening all over the country, so he'll be talking about that. Yeah.
All over the world, for that matter. Okay, so great show, and we'll, phone lines will be open for most of it. A lot of probably when we talk to Mel, we won't take calls for the beginning of it, and hopefully we'll get a chance to let the callers talk to Mel. Okay, well, we're going to start off with some news, and obviously the big story in the world right now is in Syria, and this has been our lead story for the last several shows,
right,
as things have escalated there.
And while you're listening to the updates we give you on Syria, please go get a pen or pencil and some writing material, because I've got some phone numbers to give to you in a little bit.
Right. Okay, let's see. Things have really reached a head here just lately. This has become a huge story and a huge potential problem here. It started, well, this particular event anyway, started on August 21st, where there was a supposed chemical weapons attack in the town of Guapo or something.
This is a pretty large scale event. This is anywhere from 200 to 1,200 people. They have better numbers on that now?
No, there have not been.
It's a lot of dead
updates
people.
To that. Well, there's been suggestions, a lot of information on the internet saying that that it was much smaller than that. Nobody seems to know.
So it's murky still.
Right. And so the UN chemical weapons inspectors were in the country at that time, nearby. It took them a couple of days to get access to get to the site, and they did their investigation and they left. And we're still awaiting the results of that. But while we're awaiting the results of it, President Obama is moving ahead anyway. He says that, you know, he is convinced that it was perpetrated by the Assad regime and that he has enough information to proceed. So he's going.
But he's not going to, though. He's letting Congress take it.
He said that he would let Congress decide. He wouldn't do anything until Congress voted on it.
Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing, or is that a smokescreen of some kind?
Well, frankly, it doesn't matter whether the Congress approves it or not. This is an international law arena, and he took it to the UN Security Council, and it was vetoed by Russia and China. And they said, you know, let's wait till the investigation is complete. Let's wait till we get the report back from the UN investigators. So we have nothing to go on right now. So they delay that. It went to NATO. NATO says no.
That's because the Germans were have been against this all along.
Right. And the UK voted against it. And they hadn't voted.
In Parliament, right?
They hadn't voted against the war since 1792.
1792 is the last time they found a war they didn't like.
Right, yeah. And so that was a big development. And they're supposedly one of our big allies there. It seems like France is still on board here. But in reality, it doesn't matter what the Congress says. They don't have the authority to go in and attack Syria.
So they also don't have the authority.
Yeah, so the Congress does not have the authority.
Well, who elected them then if they don't have the authority to do it?
This is an international. They have, you know, control, and they write laws about what happens in the United States. You know, they don't run the world. They may think they do, but they do not.
Yeah.
There are international international regulations.
So what does international law say about this kind of thing now that we've established that neither President Obama or the Congress has the authority to go ahead and order these military actions?
Well, it says basically you have to get the approval of the United Nations before you can do any kind of military action.
But Obama didn't say anything about that.
No. And so John Kerry has been running around trying to convince the Senate to vote for this. John Kerry. And this is quite, you know, astounding that Kerry, he was the big anti-war person back in the Vietnam era.
Yeah, he's changed a little bit since then.
When he was running for president there, he totally disavowed all his actions then.
Yeah.
And now he's starting wars. Basically.
Yeah, so he's all grown up now.
And he's taking, you know, spurious information and lies, basically, to the American people and to the Congress and trying to get, you know, a war started. So it is quite ridiculous what he's doing there. It's kind of like, I don't know if you recall, and this is was not too long ago, maybe 10 years ago or so, when the ramp up to the Iraq war.
Sure.
You know, Colin Powell sat in front of the UN
and lied through his teeth wasn't just his teeth, Dave. His whole face was lying.
Yeah. And so, you know, he had kind of disappear. You haven't heard much from him since then. And so he knows that he made a big mistake there. It destroyed his career. And so now Kerry is kind of doing the same thing. And so I guess they're hoping that we don't remember that long ago. But with the Internet, it's kind of hard to forget. You know, the Internet never forgets. So
I just want to remind folks to get your pencil and pen ready, because I got phone numbers for you if this news about Syria isn't exactly what you want to hear.
Right. Okay. So then the Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved.
CFR?
Approved the motion to allow President Obama to initiate limited military strikes in and around Syria that might or might not be related to this situation. So basically gave him the green light to do anything.
Check.
He could invade Syria, he could invade Lebanon, he could invade Iran, for that matter, according wording of that that motion.
Good.
So it, basically, that was a committee. They approved it. Now goes to the full Senate.
The full Senate. Well, so in the full Senate, we've got Mazie Hirono and Brian Schatz. And I would say that if you want this to not go ahead, you can give these folks a call. And I have the phone numbers for you right now. This is Mazie Hirono. Her phone number is area code 202-224-6361. I talked to her office this morning and I said, hey, you know what? I don't think airstrikes are a good idea. I urge you strongly to vote no on military intervention in Syria. And they thank me very much. I said they're getting lots of phone calls from constituents around the state. And it took me like all of 35 seconds to do.
Right.
So her number again is area code 202-224-6361. That's Mazie Hirono. And I've got Brian Schatz. I'll give you in a moment here.
Okay. So, so it looks like perhaps the Senate will approve this. They're very hawkish. They're democratically controlled, and it's kind of unusual, but it seems like they are going to go with the president on this.
Well,
but the House pretty much is against it at this point. So preliminary polls in the House are saying that they don't have the votes to do it. But that assumes that there isn't another false flag attack in the next week or two to help sway them to change their votes.
Well, here's Brian Schatz's number. He's our other senator. We have two junior senators now in the Senate, which after decades of having so much seniority, we've got kind of low men on the totem pole. But Brian Schatz, he's been a senator for, I guess, a number of months now. His number is area code 202-224-3934. That's area code 202-224-3934. You can call him up and tell him the same thing. Airstrike's a terrible idea. Don't want to do it. Urge against military intervention. But now let's go over to the House. We're here on the Outer Islands. Our representative is Tulsi Gabbard. I called her office also this morning, left a message. Her number is area code 202. That's the Beltway area code. 225-4906.
Right.
225-4906. And you can give these folks a call. And I don't know how much good this actually does in the big picture, but it can't hurt. So,
right.
So consider that.
Yeah, I heard something to the effect that calls to the House are running, like 95% against. But that, like you say, that doesn't always matter. So there's a couple of interesting things here. Now, Putin, the prime minister or president of Russia.
Poobah. He's like the poobah over there.
He's totally against it. And he's saying, I'm not supporting Assad regime. I'm supporting international law in this. You can't go around bombing countries just because you don't like them. So there are laws and there is a process that you have to go through to comply with these laws. So,
and I would think that the political leaders of America should be a little embarrassed when other countries
are
calling them to task for not following international law.
It's so blatant, and we've seen it so many times before that I can't believe they're even trying it again. But they got away with it in Libya, so maybe they're a little bit more emboldened there. So right now there's a G20 summit meeting in Russia, in St. Petersburg, and Obama canceled the meeting with Putin beforehand, supposedly about Snowden.
Didn't have enough to talk about.
He was upset because they gave Snowden asylum in
temporary asylum.
And so he instead went to Sweden, and now he's in Russia. And Putin was there calling Kerry a liar, saying they don't have information that they say they do, and all this. Now the U.S. said that they have samples from this attack.
And does it match the samples that they sold? The
stuff that we sold them? What they said is it showed traces of sarin-like compounds or something vague. But how did they get these samples? Because, it's in Syria. They don't have representatives in Syria, so we're not sure. And the story is that one of the Syrians went to Lebanon and said he was there and he felt nauseous. So somebody took him to the hospital and said, hey, let's test this guy for sarin or for some chemical weapons. And then he hung around there for a couple hours and then left. They never even tested him. But somehow they're saying that they have evidence, they have proof that Assad used these weapons.
You can't see it out there in radio land, but we're all shaking our heads back and forth right now.
So, this is, the Iraq war buildup all over again.
Redux.
Fortunately, Putin, Russia, China are against it.
And Germany.
Obama is pushing it hard. He is taking it personally that people are, questioning his judgment in this case. And I don't know why.
He's just looking a lot like Bush to me.
He's itching for a war here. It's really ridiculous. We're under sequestration.
No money.
Program.
No money.
No money. No
money.
Government.
No money.
Here,
no money. Sorry. No money. We're all out of money.
We got plenty for wars.
Oh, a war. We got plenty of money for that.
Yeah. And then who is it? McCain was saying, the Arabs are going to pay for the war. They want the war.
That's what Bush said about Iraq.
Yeah. And so one of the big things about this is that it seems like the entire impetus for this war is a pipeline.
Yeah.
They want a pipeline through Syria. Qatar, they're one of the big proponents of the war. They have a big natural gas deposits down in the Gulf, and they have no way of getting it to the European markets. And so Russia sells all their natural gas to Europe, and they're making a lot of money on that. So Qatar wants to get their natural gas to Europe, and so they asked for easement to run pipeline right through Syria.
Iranians already have an arrangement with the Syrians, don't they? For the very same kind of pipeline.
I'm not sure about that.
That's my understanding.
Anyway, the Syrians said, no, we don't want your pipeline through our country. And so that's why Qatar is basically funding this war so far. They're arming the rebels. They hired the rebels. They sent them in. And they've got us on their side as well. So it's all about oil, all about natural gas now, it seems like, and it's quite ridiculous. Hey, we've got a couple people here calling in, so maybe they want to talk about the Syria situation. So let's go to the phones.
Aloha. Thanks for waiting patiently, and you are now joining us on Out of the Box.
Well, thank you, Jonathan and Dave. I want to get you guys' take. I don't know if your memory is better than mine, but...
What was the question?
Well, here's a comment and a question.
Oh, okay.
It came on the news last night that Great Britain, within the last year or so, has sold the chemical components used to make sarin.
Right.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I heard about that. Now, who do they sell it to? They sell it to Assad?
Syria.
To the Syrian government?
Yes, sir.
And this is after the Civil War started?
Yeah, this has been the last year or two.
So right in the middle of a war, they're shipping chemical weapons components to...
That can be used to make sarin.
Right.
And then talking about, you know, recent history and memory and, you know, Monsieur's, of course, liar and then the other liar. The statesman, yes. The general and the former senator. As I recall, and that's all I'm calling for your help, gentlemen, wasn't it the United States that didn't like Iran, and so they sold, of course, to our buddy Saddam Hussein, the chemical weapons that he used to gas not only his own people, 5,000 of his own people, and he also used to gas the Iranians because they were not our buddies.
Sure. This was back when Saddam was a puppet regime dictator top for the U.S.
Could you help me in my little mind? I'm trying to figure out the difference between that situation with chemical gas and poisoning people, civilians, and then the current situation. Is there a difference?
Like a moral difference?
Yes.
No, I would say no.
They're all wrong.
We were wrong then. It's all bad.
And we're wrong now.
I mean, sometimes I feel like I should just, you know, not listen to the news. It's just, it's so full of lies and BS.
Well, you probably didn't hear that, what I just said on the mainstream media. You didn't hear that Rumsfeld was in Iraq at the time while they were showing him how to use it.
Shaking Saddam's hand.
Yeah, taking orders for chemical weapons. You probably didn't hear that on the mainstream media.
This is all during the Reagan era.
What I find also interesting, of course, is the day before 9/11/92, on 9/10, Rumsfeld said, well, we can't find $3 trillion in the Pentagon's fund.
Yeah.
And we're going to look into this. We just don't know where the money is. And then, of course, after 9/11, the next day, they never paid much attention to that.
Fell down the memory hole.
Yeah, right down the rat hole.
Rumsfeld and the good general and the former peacenik, the former lovely senator. I mean, it's beyond, gentlemen. But keep up your banter. I love to listen to how you guys ferret out the world situation.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you, guys.
Aloha, caller. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Yeah,
you're
Tom
on.
Straight calling in.
Aloha.
Aloha.
So I understand that you're. Why don't you introduce yourself to listeners who don't maybe know who you are.
Well, my name's Bob Streit. I'm an agronomist from the Midwest of the mainland. I live in Iowa, and anyhow. Was invited over here to help on a little investigation and probably in support of what they're trying to do in the western coast area.
So out on the west side.
Yeah, in Lahui.
And what are you're going to do a presentation next Tuesday night, is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Myself and Dr. Don Huber are going to give a presentation at a get-together there.
So you're the soil pathologist? Is that what
I work a lot with soil microbiology, and I also work with quite a few farmers and such. And as far as setting up disease and insect control programs, management programs, so, yeah, I've done a lot of that. And then also in what you might call soil remediation and disease remediation.
So it's making the soil healthy again after it's been kind of beaten up with chemicals for a while.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, we don't pay as good of attention to health of the soil as we should. We definitely do not pay as much attention to it as, say, the Germans and, say, the South Americans do. So we need a lot of help. We need a lot more education on it, and we also need probably more attention paid by some of the companies that are producing some of the pesticides that are on the market.
So where is your presentation going to be, and what time is that going to be?
It's at the Kauai Community Center for Performing Arts, Tuesday, September 10th at 6:30 in the evening.
Okay, and that's going to be free?
Yes.
So who is invited? Who are you hoping will come, and who will attend, and who can benefit the most from what you're going to share with folks?
Well, we're hoping any of the people in Waimae that have problems with the dust that's coming off the seed fields, also people that live along the coast that maybe are experiencing any health problems, breathing problems, what have you, from the probably overuse of different pesticides, particular insecticides in that area.
Okay, and then what it's going to start at 6:30, and how late will it go?
We've got about 2 hours scheduled for Don Huber to speak, and then an hour myself.
Can you tell us a little bit about Don Huber, what he'll be talking about?
Well, Don Huber is a person I have great respect for. He's very, very intelligent, very well-traveled, very religious, and anyhow, he is retired professor emeritus from Purdue University. He was also the person appointed by the military and intelligence communities to be alert to any threat to this country's food supply. He filled that role for 40-plus years serving the U.S., and then was also a colonel in the U.S. Air Force and did a lot of work with the what is now called Homeland Security, watching food supply. And then when he finally did alert the Secretary of Agriculture to what he viewed as a huge threat to the U.S. food supply and health of most of the American people, he was just totally ignored.
Why was that, do you think?
Too many dollars in play, too many politics involved. Five of us went into the Undersecretary of Agriculture's office and laid out what we said we thought would happen, that there'd be major problems with the food production, corn and soybeans in the U.S. in 2010, 2011. And this year in the Midwest, what we're seeing is a die-off in the corn and soybean crop across pretty much the whole Corn Belt.
Just as he would predicted.
Yeah, this is the fifth year out of the last five that we've seen the crop die 3 to 6 weeks early.
Well, so it sounds like you got some high-powered conversations going to happen about soil remediation and crops and stuff. So that seems like that'll be good.
Yeah, and then also what we're seeing, we've got quite a few good crop production people and medical people involved in our group, and what they've done is they have basically recognized that there is a very strong link between healthy soil, nutritious food, and good human health. Because, you know, if you go to schools nowadays, if you go through the hospitals, if you look in the local papers or even go to the gas stations and look at the benefits that are being held for, you know, mothers, sisters, children, babies that are either have leukemia or some other form of major ailment, it's all tied to, typically all tied to some sort of exposure, and most people don't realize what is in their food nowadays from a toxin standpoint, which is now more easy to document with some of the new immunoassay test strip equipment.
Go ahead.
Don will describe this, and then my job as agronomist with the farmers and companies I work with is to actually come up with a remediation plan. So Don might scare the dickens out of people telling the truth. I'll try to lay out a management plan of actions they need to take and probably what products that farmers are using. So I'd say there is some good information that they'll glean from it that they can take home and put to use on the farm this coming season that would help the situation.
Okay, that sounds great. And maybe you could tell folks again what time and where your speaking is going to be.
Right now, scheduled for Tuesday, September 10th at the Kauai Community College, 6:30 until 9:30. And we're expecting a very big crowd for this.
Yeah, that's a pretty, I think it's got a, like 500-seat capacity there. So it's like you can put rock concerts in there.
Yeah, that's the first one. Then the second one is September 11th at the Waimea Canyon Middle School in the cafeteria, scheduled for the same time, 6:30 in the evening.
All right, well, great. I hope that those are really well-attended events.
Yeah, we hope so, too. So we sure appreciate the opportunity to mention it on your news show.
Oh, well, that's what community radio is all about.
All right, thank you for calling.
Okay,
all
thank
right.
you then.
Laura.
Sean.
Okay, let's see. I just want to finish up on this Syria thing there. I think we pretty much laid out what I know about it. But another selling point the administration is using is they digging up these old neocons, neoconservatives from the Bush administration. So just recently I've heard from Kissinger, Rumsfeld.
Kissinger? Is he still alive, that guy?
Paul Bremer is another one.
Paul Bremer.
He was the first American president of Iraq.
Right.
Let's see who else.
Paul L. Bremer, the third. Yeah. Yeah. I think he is.
I don't know if they're still using the Bremer dollars over there, the Iraqi...
Bremer bucks, I think they call
Bremer
them.
Bremer bucks, the Iraqi dinar that they introduced there.
You know, that's just such a bizarro little twist in American history there.
Yeah, and then John McCain's been a big proponent of this. And so this situation is really coming to a head right now. Hopefully not get through the Congress. Hopefully Obama will not move until there's... the information comes out, because at this point, you know, we don't know whether there was a chemical weapon attack, whether there, you know, how many people died, who did it, and so, you know, it's not clear what the hell's going on over there. So it's really super premature to move ahead with this action.
Well, it's also really difficult for anyone of sound mind and body to understand how going in and calling down airstrikes on a country in the middle of some kind of a civil war or proxy war, how that's going to be helpful in any way.
Yeah, and what would it entail? They just go start, bombing stuff. You know, maybe they bomb their chemical weapons stockpiles and release those materials to the atmosphere. That would not be good.
That would be bad.
They could also, they would probably try to degrade
the infrastructure.
Yeah, their military infrastructure.
Which means people.
But also civilian infrastructure,
right.
Which we typically do. We bomb all the power plants, the water plants.
Sure, that's how you take
schools,
a country apart.
You
unzip the country bolt by building.
Right. And but also we don't know what the response from their allies are going to be. Russia, China, Iran, Hezbollah in Lebanon. This all totally... uncharted territory as to what the response would be to a U.S. attack. So it's an extremely dangerous situation right now. Obama's being extremely provocative about it, his response to it, and it's certainly premature to any sort of information that we've been given access to at this point. So very dangerous. I'm hoping that it gets resolved peacefully, but I don't see how... you know, Obama's going to back out of this situation without, looking bad, and he's not going to want that to happen. So.
No, Obama no want look bad.
Yeah. So, that's all I know at this point, but it's not over yet. And hopefully soon.
It doesn't sound good.
No. Anyway, one big thing about this is it really seems like the internet and the alternative media are really putting a crimp in these people's plans to destroy Syria and to get their pipeline through there. And so this is a big selling point for the alternative media and how information in people's hands is dangerous to these plans.
Well, it's helpful to help put bad ideas to bed.
Right, yeah. And so when, you know, lies are put in front of Congress, then, you know, they can be debunked. And that is happening all over now. And that is definitely swaying a lot of people in Congress, a lot of world leaders. And so it's really you know, a change of the situation now. I mean, we had the internet back in the Iraq War, but it wasn't as mature at that point.
And right, so and it's continuing to mature. So we'll see where things go in the future with that. Well, from war in Syria to war on whistleblowers, I wanted to let you know about a free press and national security state film. This is going to be playing Friday, September 6th, which is tomorrow at 6:30 at the Kapa'a Library. It's called War on Whistleblowers. It's all about the free press and the national security state. This is going to be presented by the Kauai Alliance for Peace and Social Justice. If you want more information, you can email koikoi1@hawaii.rr.com. Should be a good documentary film.
Okay. Let's take another phone call.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Yes. Do you gentlemen see a parallel between perhaps the preceding events towards World War One, in terms of namely the entangling alliances?
Yeah, entangling alliance structures.
I mean, is it just me that's thinking this looks like a parallel?
Well, you're not the first person who's mentioned World War III, if that's what you're driving
at. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if all these countries, I mean, are committed to one another, if, for example, I mean, Russia is committed to Syria, and, of course, even Iran is committed to Syria. Of course, we're having the Sunni versus the Shia. I mean, even currently in Lebanon, where they have the Shia and the Sunni, the Sunni temples, Sunni places of worship are being blown up, right?
Yeah.
And because the rebels are the Sunni, and the curious moral thing, talking about another moral dilemma, is the fact that this, if we go in the side of the rebels, then we're on the side of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few military folks get on the internet and post a picture of them in their uniform. Their face is covered by a sign that says, "I didn't join the Marines to fight for Al-Qaeda in a Syrian civil war."
And this is,
there are hundreds, if not thousands, of them coming forward and saying that now, that they are not going to participate in that.
Seems like quite a moral quagmire.
Yeah, quagmire, that's a good word.
Well, thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Sure.
Okay, let's see. I have one more quick news item here, since we got distracted by the GMO talk here. But I'm always looking for evidence that we're somehow winning the war against the corporations, the cabal of financial institutions and everything. And there was an interesting thing in the paper or on the internet here over the last couple of weeks from the country of Hungary.
Hungary. Now, that's in Hungary. Central Europe for folks who couldn't find it.
Eastern Europe. It was the Eastern Bloc, in the Russian bloc of Eastern Europe. But it's now part of the EU, European Union. And if you recall, last year, they kicked out Monsanto out of the country. They banned GMO food growing in their country, and they destroyed 1,000 acres of GMO seed corn.
Now, this is in their country. Corn that they didn't know was GMO.
Some was known. The farmers bought the seeds knowing it was GMO. Others, the farmers just bought corn seeds. They didn't know the difference. They may not even know what GMOs are. But anyway, they were 1,000 acres of it growing in that country, and they just plowed it all under.
But this is the state that went ahead and did that.
This is Hungary that did that.
Right, the state of Hungary. Okay.
So so they're ahead of the game on the GMO front. But then just this week, I guess a couple of years ago when they had some financial problems, they took out some loans from the International Monetary Fund.
The IMF.
IMF, yes, a very evil organization. And so they were tired of the structural adjustment programs where the IMF says, if you can't make your payments, then, you know, instead you change your policies. And cut your social programs, cut your pensions, open up your markets to our corporations.
To predatory foreign capitalists.
Privatize your national resources.
And then sell them to people.
And so they got tired of all this. Oh, and they also charged usurious rates of interest during these transactions. And so basically they said, okay, well, we're going to pay off our loan early, And by the way, IMF, you can close your Budapest office because we don't need you anymore. So they kicked the IMF out of the country. So this is huge, you know, and it's a big step for them. I mean, they have a somewhat populist government and president, prime minister there, Viktor Orban.
O-R-B-A-N.
O-R-B-A-N, yeah. And so he seems to be doing some of the right things over there. I don't know anything about his other policies, but just in terms of the GMOs and kicking the IMF out, these are some good steps in the right direction, I think. And basically just told the IMF, you know, we don't need you anymore. Get out. So kudos to them. Hopefully we'll see another 50, 60 countries do the same thing here over the next few years. Then we'll really be making some progress. Okay, we've got another caller.
Another caller?
Yep.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Yes, it seems that the water...
Caller, have you called into the show before?
Oh, maybe once or twice. The reason I'm calling is it's related to the corporations controlling resources. I was listening to that from Kai and Y.
A very good show, by the way.
A Hawaiian gentleman called, and he was aware, and he told everyone that basically the corporation UBS, United Bank of Switzerland, controls the water resources for all the five seed companies. They actually control the... So, I mean, and he mentioned the history... Like, I think it was Bolivia he cited where, you know, the people couldn't pay their debt, so they took control, UBS took control of the water supply.
Then they got kicked out of the country.
Yeah, I think they got it back.
It's a similar situation.
Yeah.
I mean, when I found that out, that really freaked me out. That's the power behind these seed companies.
Well, that's happening here now, too, where the water's being diverted to the GMO companies.
Yeah, he said it was the UBS that controlled that particular entity.
Right.
Anyway, thanks.
Okay. Well, we're going to turn away from events around the world, and we're going to turn back home to events happening here on the island. We've got a big march and rally coming up this weekend on Sunday, and we've got two of the organizers in the studio with us today, Fern Nui Nui and Dustin Barker. You guys check your microphones to make sure you're on and good.
Aloha, Kauai.
Aloha. How about you, Dustin?
Aloha.
There we go.
Yeah, it helps if I turn them up.
So welcome to KKCR, and thanks for being a guest with us this afternoon. I wanted to ask you guys, this big Mana March, why is it called Mana? What's Mana mean? Why is it a Mana March?
Well, you know, I called it the Mana March because...
I thought we were going to go out to Mana and march out there. I thought, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
That's what a couple people said. That's funny, but, you know, Mana is like, you know, it's means... power, like good energy. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. And spiritual power.
Yeah, and that's what we're uniting the island to send off this energy, and that's why I came with that name, because I think the energy behind the word, it has all the meaning in what we're fighting for.
It has something to help spiritually ground people when they're out there marching.
Definitely.
Awesome. How many people do you think are going to be there?
Well, you know, we're expecting close to 5,000 people.
Thousands.
Thousands of people. When was the last time there was a march up Rice Street with thousands of people? And I don't remember that ever happening before.
Never.
No. So this is kind of a little bit history-making, I think, right now.
Yeah, well, you know, we threw the march in March when we did that one. It was, you know, there's 2,000 people in the
downpouring rain.
Down as pouring as you'd ever see in Poipu.
Yeah,
I
was shivering that day.
Yeah, and as you know, I've probably had 1,000 people tell me that they wish they were there. So, you know, we're expecting to have a larger number than that.
Well, tell me, what are all the things that go in together to putting together a big event like this? I mean, you can't just say, oh, hey, let's have a march and then do it. There's people you got to talk to. You got to talk to the mayor. You got to talk to the cops. How does that all work? How do you put together a big event like this?
You have to have Fern with you.
Thank you. Well, it is a lot of work. You know,
it's like a full-time job almost, yeah?
Absolutely, definitely. But the reality is that, you know, we're well within our First Amendment rights to protest, regardless of, I mean, we don't really have to organize, so to speak, in that form. We can occupy the sidewalks. We can demonstrate our First Amendment rights and show our support for the bill. And I believe, and we've had legal support to give us the guidelines of where we are and are not allowed to go. as Dustin said, though, you know, we are expecting more people than that we had in Poipu, and the possibility that, you know, thousands more could show up would present a significant safety and traffic issue for, you know, Lihui and Rice Street. And, you know, Ohana Okoai, myself, Dustin, and most of the organizers, everybody I know, actually that's involved, really cares about the safety.
Sure.
And I know.
I mean,
that
it's a bill 2491 is a safety bill.
Exactly. We're all about the health and safety of our community, and that is number one. And so from the beginning, you know, as soon as this was a last minute kind of thing, we didn't have a very long period to work on planning of the details to implement the event. But we did reach out immediately to the county, and both the mayor's office and KPD have facilitated extra support for the event, and we will be facilitated on the road safely, which is a huge thing, because, like we said, safety is the most important thing, and everybody on Kauai wants to see a good family-friendly, effective event. So, you know, the parks and rec have worked with us to get last-minute permits. Those kind of things do take a little bit of work and are difficult, but we'll be utilizing the Vendina Stadium for a gathering at 11:30 Pule.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. What can people expect to show up around 11:30 for Pule? What is Pule for folks who don't know?
It's a prayer, and we'll probably have an opening maybe. We're allowing that to eventuate as it is, but it'll definitely be a connection and a prayer between those of us starting together on this historic march on the council chambers to demand political change like never really before. And so we'll gather between 11 and 11:30, and then you know, come together for prayer at 11:30, and then at 12 we'll start the march. We'll march down Ho'olako around the back behind Vendina Stadium, where it connects out through Ace Hardware.
Oh, in the back
Wright
road.
Street,
oh, okay.
Right there. So that will probably be facilitated through closure of maybe one or both lanes by police. And then we will continue down, turning right on Rice Street, continuing all the way to the council chambers, where we will rally. We will have people like John Cruz and Makana coming to play.
John Cruz isn't coming.
Oh, he's not coming? Okay.
Sorry.
Makana is definitely coming. I've spoken to him a few times today.
Okay, good.
Shiloh Pa, Kepa Cruz. We're going to have
Chad Pa.
Chad.
So a couple of Pa's are going to be there.
A couple of Pa's, yeah.
Talented family name.
Yeah, that's
right?
For sure.
Good family. And, so we're going to have music and speakers and educational events. And, it's going to be a really big uniting for our island, and I'm really starting to look forward to it.
Yeah, you know, when we have these meetings, every time they've been on, you know, work days, and it's people are frustrated because they're so for the bill, you know what I mean? But they have jobs.
Sure, they got to feed the family.
Yeah, and they cannot be there to support. And you know, sometimes you know the other side, the biotech companies, these chemical companies, they show up with all their employees they employ. With vans and vans and vans, and it makes it look like it's a one-sided thing, but really the whole island is against what's going on. They're just working, and you know what I mean? They can't be there to show that they're supporting, you know? So, you know, we give them this Sunday where, you know, there's no soccer, no football, no farmers markets, a lot of birthday parties on Saturdays. It's like, no excuses, here we go. Let's show these guys how much people really care and how much people are really behind this bill.
Well, it's pretty impressive to me, because I think the organization and planning for this started less than 2 weeks ago. Is that about right?
Yeah, my initial engagement with the county when we actually decided we were doing this was the 17th of August, when I contacted KPD about my concerns regarding potential road closure and disruption to traffic and safety. And, you know, we've been engaging with the county and everybody else that goes into it. I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to be affected. We had to go on ground door-to-door notice to affected businesses.
The businesses
along Rice
are
Street.
There, sure.
There's residences as well. The churches were particularly difficult. I mean, we only finalized on the Friday a week ago that we were going to be changing the date to the Sunday from the Saturday, because we believed that safety, you know, I dealt with the county on that, and they were, you know, a lot more able to facilitate the event and a lot more able to give us the stadium for parking.
On the Sunday.
Uh-huh. So a last minute change on the Friday, and then, you know, by that next Sunday, we had to notify the churches along Rice Street to make sure that they could tell their congregations that they're not able to do that. And, they're not able to maybe get in or out if some of the road closure might affect their church service. We didn't know exactly what times they were. And, yeah, so there was a lot of little planning and a lot of things on the ground that had to happen right away.
So what can you tell folks who have maybe never been in a protest march before how to prepare and what kind of stuff they should bring with them, like umbrella or parasol, extra water? What kind of things... and it's not very far. It's like, what, 2 miles?
It's a mile. It's
a
just
mile.
Under, it's actually just
under
a mile.
Mile.
I think it's like 0.95 of a mile when we drove it. But definitely bring your aloha, number one.
Number one, aloha.
We're asking everybody to bring their aloha and their, you know, their calm nature as we kind of unite in a really unprecedented form. And your power. Bring your mana. You know, bring your mana, bring your aloha, and march the street with whatever you feel you need. Maybe water, an umbrella if you want shade.
Yeah, we're trying to have, like, you know, everything to facilitate, you know, the elders, the kids, you know, having water, shade at both sides. And, you know, it's a real family-friendly event. You know what I mean? We're not a bunch of radicals trying to do something crazy. We're a bunch of peaceful people who love everything we have here on Kauai. And that's everything, you know, that's our world. And we're here to march in love, you know, for the future of what we love.
Hey, we just got a call from John Cruz, one of the crew members of the Hokulea. And they're going to be moving the Hokulea and the Hikianalia, which are up at Hanalei now. They're going to be sailing down to Nawiliwili. Hope to get in there by 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. And they're hoping to make it to the walk here, to the march.
So they're going
to
come up from now, Willy Willy.
Yeah, so they're going to
awesome.
Come up.
That's some mana right there.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. I wasn't familiar with the Hikianalia. He called it the Star of Spica, which is an interesting name there.
Yeah, it's a sister ship. Yeah.
We got Uncle Walter coming in from Molokai. We got a lot of people coming in. Apparently, there's some Hawaiians that are flying home from this from the mainland.
For maybe they haven't been back in a while.
You know, it's a really uniting thing. We feel for our community.
It's been a calling to all the Aloha Aina warriors. You know, the people who have that connection with home. And
what means Aloha Aina?
Aloha Aina is basically loving what you have, loving what we have here, and, you know, treating it how you'd like to be treated back.
Kind of like the golden rule.
Yeah, it is the golden rule. The Hawaiians were so ahead of their time that they just, you know, it was so simple. Their lifestyle was so simple, yeah. And, you know, they lived by those rules of Aloha Aina, taking care of what they had and knowing that taking care of that would take care of them and the next generation and the next generation.
Sustainability was something that Western civilization is just on the verge of discovering right now.
And where we're at right now is like so common sense, you know what I mean? It's like poison your aina, poison, poison, poison. It's going to do nothing but poison us back.
Yeah, well, it's not going to perpetuate the life of the land if you poison it.
No, it's against everything where we are.
And just more on the mana, too. I was just looking up a little bit of the definition it says here on the Polynesian culture is a spiritual quality considered to have supernatural origins, a sacred, impersonal force existing in the universe. Therefore, to have mana is to have influence and authority and the power to perform in a given situation, which is pretty much exactly what we need. We're empowering our county council with the mana to make the decisions that they need.
So this is a little tricky for the county council because if you look on their average docket, you know, what they have to deal with week in, week out, it's not bills like $24.91. You know, this is they got to reach for the fence to get to wrap their arms around this one.
Yeah, you know. I just sent a letter to the county council. Hopefully they get it. And it was inviting them to all be there and see for themselves how much people really support this bill, you know, because this isn't a joke. This is our future. And it's, you know, we're at the pinnacle of going one way or the other. You know, we're at the tip of the pyramid.
Yeah, it's a choice point right now.
Yeah, and it's like we can start thinking about the future and how we're going to make it better and more self-sustainable and healthier. Or we can keep just doing what we're doing and taking, taking, taking. And it's, you know, we're at that point all around the world with Fukushima, with the poison farming, with the wars. You know what I mean? It's just like the earth is just at this boiling point where we're either going to make right or just keep taking and making wrong till we just diminish ourselves. You know what I mean?
You guys want to maybe take some calls from questions from listeners at all?
Yeah, if anybody's got any questions or comments to these March organizers, give a call in the studio, 826-7771.
And we got a caller right away. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. You have a question for our organizers, Dustin and Fern. I'm sorry. You might want to turn your radio down there a little bit. Getting some feedback.
I'm trying to turn it off.
There you go. Is that better? Oh, boy. Not yet.
There we go.
Now, you got to turn that radio off, brah.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that.
Try the off button.
It's one of these.
That sounds better.
Okay, you got it?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, now?
There you go. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great point you guys provide. I'd like to pass comment on the fact that these folks that are helping to organize and encouraging everybody to turn out, that they're doing the right thing. And there's other communities in the court United States that are also doing such actions. So it's not, should it be something new to the county council? It should be something that they would approach their legal advice to see if anybody else is doing it. And of course, New York has banned fracking from the northern part of the state to preserve the Finger Lakes, which are a natural resource up there.
Now you're talking about fracking in this case, yeah?
I'm talking about a community. Communities banning corporate activity, which is detrimental to their resources in the local area.
Yeah.
That's what this is going on here.
Yeah. It's not a pesticide. It's not just Kauai standing up for the future, you know what I mean? It's going on all over our country, all over the world.
Right. The communities are starting to push, realize how to take this action in their own hands, as opposed to reliance on the state or the federal to step in and do the right thing. So the communities are protected, like what you folks are doing, which is the right thing. It's getting everybody on board to realize that we have to preserve our future.
Well, thank you for calling in, Carl. I really appreciate that.
Right, so don't feel alone. There's a lot of resources out there with regard to the community. We can think townships, municipalities, passing laws, housing, county laws, for instance, to restrict certain activities that are detrimental to the natural resources of that area. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Okay, so I support you. I'll be there.
Mahalo.
See you there. Thanks for calling.
Aloha.
But give a little more info on the time and locations again.
Okay. The Mana March. We're going to be at starting 12 o'clock. There's going to be 11:30 prayer pule at Vidina Stadium.
Is that where people should drive in to park?
Yeah, we'll have parking.
There's going to be a lot of parking, yeah, there. So okay. We're going to try to fit as
we
many
are encouraging
in there as possible.
Huge amounts of carpool.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Please carpool. Please don't have an empty seat. If there's anybody in your community that has a ride, if somebody's standing on the side of the road with a pass the bill shirt, definitely pick them up.
If you have
a truck, fill the back of your truck. We are going to have buses that go back from the county council building back to the stadium to help people so they can get back to their vehicles.
Sure.
So they don't have to worry too much about that. We've got somebody organized for buses. And catch the Kauai buses just running as well, but be there.
Yeah. Everybody's, you know, there's a lot of carpooling going on. Everybody's talking about driving vans and anybody needs rides on the North Shore.
You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa.
As well, get that out of the way.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Maybe not the best time to have that run.
Okay.
But, there's going to be vans driving from Hanalei. So, you know, if you're on the side of the road, put up a sign that says going to the march, I'm sure.
Yep, get your march sign with you and stick your thumb out.
We've got a couple of calls here. Let's go to the phones.
All right. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Yeah, aloha. Thank you very much for all you're doing, organizing this march and everything. I heard an information last night that the first farmer on the island is getting sued by Syngenta because he's growing corn for his cattle and they might be stealing their pollen. So if there's any doubt on the intention of those corporations, it's happening here, so please show up someday.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that farmer contacts us. We'd like to help support him.
For real.
That'd be great.
Mahalo.
Bye, guys.
Yeah, mahalo. Mahalo. See you there. Aloha.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha. Is this me?
Yes.
So I just figured it out. If we have 400 local Kanaka Maolis and people that live here forever that have jobs there, and if we gave them each $45,000, we only need $2 million to give them a way out. I just wanted to say that because it's been bothering me for a while. I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Aloha.
Always looking at the solutions. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, it's good. That kind of math, I get a little, it makes me kind of frightened. To me, that'd be a lot of money to come out of my own pocket, but I bet you we could figure that out in the community.
There's people out there that want to help, and if we all come together and we really, unite as an island, nothing's impossible. I think, finding long-term solutions is something that we all have to be really thinking about. How do we transition our community? What are the next steps? And how do we create safer, better, healthier jobs for our community?
Well, if being in a march on Sunday from 11:30 to 2 is going to be a step in that direction, then I'm stoked for that. So I want to thank you guys for coming in and talking about that, and I wish you the best of luck with any other last-minute little brush fires you got to put out and stuff, because I think it's going to be a really great event for a whole bunch of people.
Mahalo.
Yeah, just, everybody out there, it's an invite from me to you. Please show up. This is for our future and our keiki. This is for our land and our water and the air we breathe every day, so I don't see anything more important to be involved in on your Sunday.
Right. Okay, aloha, and thanks for coming in.
Mahalo.
Okay, it's 5 o'clock, and you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. And this is the Out of the Box Show. We've got an hour left. And this show is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these fine underwriters.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural, biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina, Hawaii Lifestyle.
Introducing Julio's Beach Burritos, coming soon to Kilauea, a blend of Hawaiian and authentic Mexican cuisine. Open for breakfast and lunch. Traditional chorizo, machaca, chili colorado, and chili verde burritos. Also bacon and sausage burritos, and fish and shrimp tacos too. The signs in Kilauea will direct you to Albalita's recipes straight out of Mexico. Julio's Beach Burritos.
Yee Corp and Associates, providing personalized employee benefits and insurance solutions since 1988. A green company in an orange building. 808-245-5384 on the web at yeecorp.com.
The Kauai Concert Association proudly presents first and second place winners of the Nomburg Piano Competition, Soyan Lee and Dan Rank, performing individually as well as playing several four-hand pieces on the same Steinway. September 15th, starting at 4 p.m. at the KCC Performing Arts Center. More information and tickets available at 245-SING or online at kauai-concert.org.
Okay, we have a caller on the phone there. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Aloha, caller, you're on the air, out of the box. Can you hear us? How about now, caller?
Yeah, now.
There we go. Okay, go ahead.
There's a letter in today's Garden Island from a Glenda Nogami, Ph.D. in Kalaheo.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what'd she say?
And she's disparaging the anti-GMO people and bringing up the issue of no peer-reviewed studies, et cetera. And then she goes on to near the end to say this bill will not eliminate just jobs, quote-unquote. It will hurt people and families. It will change the dynamics of the island. Without agriculture, Kauai will turn into a two-industry island, as Lanai has become. Tourism and construction for tourists and expensive vacation homes. Without agriculture, Kauai may have little choice but to embrace growth in tourism and in construction. Is this bad? Not necessarily, but it should be by choice and strategic planning and transitioning, not by default, by passing this flawed bill. So she's making two gigantic leaps here. that this bill will eliminate agriculture on Kauai, and that because of this bill, all we'll have is tourism and construction for tourism. And I'm not sure where this person got her PhD from, but the simple fact is that there were hundreds of farmers and possibly ranchers who wanted to lease the old Kekaha sugar lands for small family farming, and the state completely shut them out because for the state it would have been a nightmare to administer
too many small parcels,
100 leases,
sure,
let's say,
sure,
versus one gigantic lease.
Well, you know what? Tough.
Well, yeah, I know. So, but my point is that this woman is making a leap that if 2491 passes, agriculture on Kauai is going to be destroyed, and that is so patently false, it hardly beggars description. But what's going to be waiting to step into the breach is organic farming, for hopefully that will not only provide jobs, but will provide more jobs than what these companies already are doing,
and provide food,
and provide food,
and provide clean income.
I just read the unfortunate fact. There was a Salon magazine had an article about this GMO, about 2491 and the whole GMO issue here in Kauai. It came out, I think, last night or this morning. Look it up, salon.com. And unfortunately, Dow Chemical has leased a huge amount of acreage from the Robinson family for 50 years. They got a 50-year lease on this Robinson land. And I just thought to myself, my God, if the Robinsons had done nothing, absolutely nothing, but turn all of that cane land into pasture and raise grass-fed cattle and had a USDA-certified slaughterhouse and the packing plant, they could have created an industry on the west side, regardless of whether you agree about eating meat or not. But if you like grass-fed cattle and you like grass-fed beef and anything to do with that, I mean, I'm just throwing things out there. There's an endless line of people waiting, and there's an endless line of possibilities of what can be done with these lands that don't involve poisoning the lands and our future generations. It does not lead to an either-or situation.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a simplified black-and-white thinking, yeah?
Yeah, it is. And again, you know, it's on the back page of the same newspaper is this one page. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it's a full-page ad from Pioneer detailing the way they're committed to the community, how many people they employ, what they've done monetarily, what they've done voluntarily, and all of this other stuff. And all of it can be true, but none of it has anything to do with the reason for 2491.
Right.
We want to know what you're spraying. We want to know when and where you're spraying it. We want to know where you're growing these transgenic crops in the interest of hard science and the protection of our future generations. It has absolutely nothing to do with how good of a corporate citizen you are here on Kauai.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, caller,
problem. But so thank you for the time, and I will answer these issues in letter to the editor, but there's really no time before now and Monday. So thank you for the time on your show, and hopefully we'll have the gigantic turnout on Sunday. Thanks again.
All right, aloha.
Aloha, caller. Are you on the air?
Aloha. I'm calling in because there's breaking news. PBS is Hawaii Insights on GMOs has been canceled. Tonight's Insight on PBS Hawaii had planned to hold a civil discussion on whether genetically modified organisms or GMOs have a place in Hawaii agriculture. Hours ago, we received word that the two pro-GMO guests who agreed to be here would not appear. They are the State Senate Agricultural Chair Clarence Nishihara and papaya grower Kin Kamaya. The reasons for the cancellations were not made clear to us, but a spokesman for the pro-GMO Hawaii Crop Improvement Association referred to a miscommunication. So they not showing up?
Huh. That doesn't sound so good.
Over the past few hours, we've extended invitations to other pro-GMO representatives and biotech scientists, but those we reach at the late hour would not agree to present. Earlier, pro-GMO organizations were always also invited to participate in tonight's program, but they all declined. They are the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association, Monsanto, Dow AgroScience, and Pioneer Hybrid. Insights on PBS is presented. Basically, they're saying since they only have one side, they have to cancel because they want to have two diverse viewpoints. Anyway, I just wanted to get that out there. Why do you think that's happening?
We got open lines. Okay.
Hello?
Hello. Sorry, we're trying to get Mel Raposo on the line there. But that is pretty interesting, and thank you very much for calling in with that information.
Okay. Aloha.
Yeah, we'll hopefully have Mel Raposo calling in.
Aloha. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hey, how's it going? This is Mel.
Hey, Mel. Hey, I heard a little rumor.
What's that?
Is it your birthday today?
Yeah, it's my birthday.
Well, get ready for this then, huh? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mel Rapolo. Happy birthday to you. And many more.
Thank you very much. What a way to spend my birthday.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we called you on to Out of the Box today for one main reason, because it's your birthday. And the second reason is because you sit on the subcommittee where Bill 2491 is presently being discussed, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it would be a good opportunity for you to sort of speak your mind about the bill and share some of your views and opinions about what could make the bill better and stronger and what would make it something that you could support. And what you see is some of the challenges in the bill and some things that you maybe would like to see changed. So just this is your opportunity to speak to the community and in a respectful manner. Everyone will listen quietly and try and get some different views into the mix.
Okay, well, I know a lot of people did watch the hearing today on TV because I've been following Facebook and been reading the respectful comments that have been placed there. So I don't think it's a secret that I have major concerns with the way the, not with the substance of the bill. Obviously, I think the bill is a good, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I don't have a problem with the substance. I have a problem that with the jurisdiction. And you know, I'm not sure how many people have actually read chapter 149A, but I would highly recommend that people read that because I think it's. It is basically the Bible for the pesticide law here in Hawaii, and it's pretty clear. I think if you read the bill or the 149A.
Where is that? Where is 149A?
That's in the Hawaii Revised Statutes. That's the Hawaii pesticides law. But I think when you read the law, everything that we want out of our bill is in place there in the state law. The problem that we're having is the state is just not enforcing.
No, they've fallen down on the job.
They're just absolutely doing nothing, and that's a big concern of mine and something that we definitely have to address.
Mel, you say everything that is in this 2491 is supposed to have been done by the state, but is not. I mean.
I think the mechanism to achieve what we want, at the end of the day, what we want is want this island to be safe.
Sure, yeah, but the state requires, like, the right to know for the companies to disclose what they're using. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, the mechanism is in place at in 149A. Through 149A and the administrative rules of the State Department of Ag, to get what is intended to get done with this bill, should be in the administrative rules.
So you're saying that with the correct administrative rules in place, we could have everything that we want
and more. I will tell you that I think the disclosure requirement, buffer zones. I mean, that should be in the administrative rules.
But it's not right now.
No, it's not, and that's what I'm saying is, Bill 2491, in my opinion, is not the vehicle. It's the improper vehicle, because if you read the Hawaii Pesticides Law, every reference that is made to the regulation, the enforcement, the rules is all between the federal government and the state. Do I agree with that? No, but that's the law. That's how it's written today, and I'm not very happy with it. But that is what we're given. That's what we're given, and I know. Everyone wants us to pass the bill, and, I don't know if people believe that if we pass the bill that once the mayor signs it that all the pesticide spraying will stop and the reporting will change. That's not going to happen, and, because there's going to be a challenge. There's going to be a legal challenge, one that I believe we will not win. And
why do you feel that is the case?
Well, because I think the way the state law is set up, it clearly requires the state to do the enforcement and to do the regulation,
but it doesn't say in there that the county can't also take care of the health and well-being of its citizens. Yeah,
it doesn't say that, but every item that is referenced in that chapter is referencing the state and the Bureau of Ag, the Department of Ag, and as well as the federal government. So it doesn't say we can, it doesn't say we cannot. But I think if you look at it with and based on the attorneys I've spoken to. And I'm not relying on the county attorney or the attorney general or any of those attorneys that testified, either for the seed companies or for Earth Justice or any of them. I spoke to attorneys that have no dog, absolutely no dog in this fight, to do a plain reading of the law and to give me an assessment. And that's the assessment that I received, that in fact the county does not have that jurisdiction.
Is that something you can share with us, the opinions of these attorneys? Because
I don't have written opinions. I mean, I spoke to attorney friends of mine.
The people that have expertise in this area?
Mm-hmm. Like in preemption laws. And, I mean, that's the dilemma I'm facing right now is where does the jurisdiction lie? And do we hang up the bill in court or do we work and use our energies to get the administrative rules changed so that we can get the enforcement relatively soon?
Well, Mel, let me ask you this. What would be so wrong with the county pressing ahead with Bill 2491 and then saying to the state, hey, this is what we want. Now, if you think that you have jurisdiction on some of these issues also, by all means, step up and make it happen. But this is our clear articulation of what we as a community are seeking here on Kauai.
Well, because I believe it's a flawed bill. I believe it's an illegal bill. That's the crux of it. I mean, my proposed amendments to the administrative rules of the Department of Ag go well beyond what's in the bill. I mean, it's the disclosure requirements, the right to know requirements go far beyond what's in the bill.
So can you give us some examples of that? Because I think that would be really great for people to hear.
I think disclosure should not be limited to what they plan on spraying. I think the bigger problem is notifying the public. Obviously, where they're going to spray and what they're going to spray and how much they're going to spray. I think that goes without saying. I think the public has a right to know that. But I also believe the public has a right to know if there's been a breach. If there's been a breach of a certain pesticide that has actually made its way into a community, into a neighborhood, into a school, that the entire community should be notified. Not just the person that made the complaint. I mean, I also believe that there's these investigations that the state does, which if you saw that embarrassing display of leadership when the Department of Ag was at our council meeting 3 years, I believe that the investigation should be concluded within 72 hours and the results made public, because I think it involves it impacts the entire community. So what I believe should happen goes far beyond what the bill does. I just do not believe that that the county has the authority to do that.
But you just admitted that the state has fallen down on the job, and they are not doing their job, and they don't even have the rules for this. So is there a problem with the county doing it because the state is not?
Well, the problem is that I don't believe the county has the authority to do so. Now, for the state to change administrative rules requires no legislative action. It requires a public hearing, and it requires the rules to be amended by the department. It doesn't go through the legislature. It doesn't. You take that politics out of it. You take out the lobbying, and all of that stuff gets out of it. It's really simple. Yeah, you go out, you do the proposed amended rules, and you hold a public hearing in the community that it's going to be affected. And then the director signs that the rules get passed. It's changed. And at that point, you know, I mean, the way 149A reads right now is even the employees of the Department of Ag, if they do not do their job, they're subject to the criminal and civil penalties imposed by the law. And I think that's where we got to go. We need to go after the state to make sure that they are doing their job. The mechanism is in place, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
But the mechanism is lying there on the ground and nobody's using it.
Well,
so
because there has been no pressure put on the state. Everything has been on the county of Kauai, and that's where I'm having a problem, because the proper pressure needs to be put on the state.
That's what I was asking you earlier, is do you think that passing Bill 2491 would put pressure on the state to say, hey, this is what we want. We want, and here's a list. Here's a clearly articulated list of what we're seeking as a community.
I don't know what kind of pressure that would put on the state, because, you know, we haven't received anything from the Attorney General yet. In my opinion, it's a flawed law. We don't have the authority. So for me to pass or support an illegal bill, it goes against my morals and ethics. That goes against my oath. You know, and that's the problem. It's not about just passing a bill.
Sure.
Right.
It's not just about saying that, we passed the bill. If we're not going to get the results, why would we do that?
Well, let me ask you this, Mel. What are some particular aspects or parts of the bill that you find trouble with, that you would like to see changed, and what would those changes be that you think would make it a stronger bill that you could support?
Well, I cannot support the bill because we don't have the jurisdiction. I already shared what I think. I would expand on the disclosure. I would definitely expand on disclosure and treat it as if, like they do with identity theft. If a company has a breach of information, any type of a breach, then they're required by federal law and state law to notify every single client, customer, member of the breach, even if they weren't impacted by the breach. I want to see something like that in the disclosure law.
Mel, in the bill itself, in the first section, the findings, Gary Hooser and Tim Bynum have outlined exactly how they feel they have the jurisdiction for this law. Okay, they have consulted attorneys, they have opinions, and they say that it is legal. Now, you have talked to your friends who are attorneys, and they say it's not. I mean, how do we reconcile those two issues?
Yeah, it's kind of a conflict there.
You know, you're going to find that with seven people will disagree.
Right, but he's documented his, but you have not documented yours.
Well, what's there to document? There's documentation, there's legal opinions on both sides of the issue. I mean, an attorney can create an opinion to either side.
Well, why do you believe one and not the other?
Well, I have a fundamental belief that we don't have the authority.
Okay.
You know, It's one of those things that I disagree with,
So, are there amendments to the bill that you would recommend and that you would support and hope to gain the support of other people inside the subcommittee on?
The only proposal is not going to be to the bill. It's going to be to the state administrative rules. That's what it's going to be, and that's what I'm working on right now. And like I said, it's going to expand on what's in the bill, because I believe that the mechanisms are in place to enforce those rules now. I mean, let's just say for the sake of discussion that this bill passes and there's no legal issues. How in the world is this county going to implement that law? That's the other dilemma. That's the other issue. Right now, the mechanisms are in place. And I believe that with the proper, influence or pressure, the state is going to be forced to. I mean, it's an election year for them as well.
So you think that the there's pressure on Abercrombie to move forward with this because he's got an election he's facing?
Well, I met with the governor, and I explained to him my concerns about the existing rules and the existing law and the existing lack of enforcement. And he agreed that there needs to be some changes, and he committed to making some change. Now, I, again, am working on the proposals that I believe should be sent to the state so we can get these implemented right away and not have to wait to create a new division within the county to defend a lawsuit. We'll get sued if we pass this bill. And it gets hung up in court for 3, 4, 5 years, 6 years. What good does that do for the people on the west side?
Well,
I mean, really.
It wouldn't change anything over there right now, but it would set the moratorium in effect, I think, to where it would not expand.
It wouldn't, because the bill will be held up if this case gets challenged. If the bill gets challenged, the bill gets hung up.
So
moratorium, no. Nothing. No disclosure. None of that.
So what do you see as the best way to move forward here? And what do you see is inside the realm of possibility? What are good steps that you think we should take?
I believe that the momentum that this island has created, which is, it has been fabulous, because I don't disagree at all with what's going on here on Kauai. I don't disagree that there's some serious issues with the pesticide use, and that it's got to be addressed. I don't disagree at all.
Are you going to be at the march on Sunday?
Unfortunately, I got to work. You know, I still
on
have
Sunday?
A regular job that I got to work.
On
Sunday? Well, it's going to be all the way from 11 a.m. all the way to 6 p.m. at the county building. So,
well, I'll try and stand by in the later afternoon.
There you go.
But I guess my point is that we have to make sure that the vehicle is in place that we can enforce. Because the bill, a passing of the bill that does nothing, to me, what does it do? I mean, someone came up to me and testified that, you know, we can be the icons. I'm not interested in being an icon. I'm not interested in being the part of the group that passed this bill that does absolutely nothing. I'd much rather see this energy, the 5,000 or 6,000 emails that I've received, flooding the state representatives and the senators and the governor, saying we need to change our rule, because the structure and the foundation for what we're trying to do is already there. It's already been written, and the law allows for the amendments of the administrative rules that can be done relatively easily without having to go to the legislature.
Do you see something like that happening if the bill gets passed?
Well, I'm going to pursue it whether the bill gets passed or not. The bill is a totally different. It's not even relevant to the administrative rule changes.
So that's something you're going to press forward with anyway.
Yeah.
Well, is that through
the committee? Is that through the committee you're on? Then is that like a formal effort underway, or is this something you're planning?
Well, it could be in the form of a resolution to the governor and to the Department of Ag, which is probably the best way to get it done if we can get concurrence from the council members.
Right. Mel, we've got a call from one of our listeners. Would you like to entertain a call?
Sure.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box. We're speaking with guest Mel Raposo, county councilman. You have a question or comment for him?
Hey, guys. Great show. I have to say, Mel, I'm not going to say anything bad about you, because I voted for you, and I think you're a good person. But, You were elected to protect the county of Kauai. That's the reason you were elected. And the problem with politics in this country is that we cannot count on enforcement, but we can at the local level. And it's your responsibility. I urge you to go Sunday and see the thousands of people that are marching for this thing. And, think of your own kids, I mean, it's a big issue for Kauai. And you were elected to protect us. You should be there on Sunday. Thanks.
All right.
When I got elected and uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the state, as well as the state laws. And I think people forget that, there's a whole bunch of moving parts as it relates to counties passing bills.
I bet you, Mel, that people don't understand it very well, because it's very complicated. You have all these different layers and all these different processes, and you have to be, like a constitutional scholar to be able to understand it all.
Well, and I guess that's where I ask that the people, consider my experience in this field. You know, like the doctors have experience in medicine, and lawyers have experience in the legal arena. And, you know, I've been in elected office now for 10 years. But, you know, how many of the people that have been criticizing myself on Facebook and writing those nasty comments, how many of them have actually sat down and read 149A? I would bet 95-96% of them did it. You know, I mean, there's a section in 149A regarding an advisory committee that says all of the changes in the state law needs to go through the advisory committee. How can the county's law conflict with the state law? That's why we have that separation and the division of power. That's why we have the different levels of government. And it's very hard to explain that to an emotional group because, I mean, really, it sounds like we should just be able to go pass the bill. Have Mayor Bernard Cavalier create the new division, and in 3 months or 4 months, go out and start kicking these people off the field. That's not going
to
happen.
Well, I don't know if it would kick anybody off the field, but we would begin to, as a community, figure out how to implement these bills and implement the setbacks and implement the notification.
Jonathan, from the emails that I've received, the vast majority of them is not emailing me about the pesticide use, it's about the GMO companies and about how evil they are and how bad they are. And that's the goal, I think, in many people's minds, is to get rid of the GMO companies. That's what the goal is. This bill doesn't do that. And the bill is a pesticide bill. And that's what I think we need to focus on.
Well, we have a question from a caller, kind of a technical question here, someone who's a little bit akamai about the legal structure. And he's wondering if you think this is an HSAC issue, and would you support moving this forward through the state level through HSAC? And maybe you can explain what HSAC stands for.
HSAC is the Hawaii State Association of Counties, and what it is, it's one representative from each council. That their biggest function is to create a legislative package every year that affects the whole state. And the resolution that I was talking about earlier would definitely be an HSAC issue because it is a statewide issue. It's not a county issue. It's a statewide issue. And if it's unhealthy here on Kauai, then it's unhealthy on Oahu and Maui and Molokai and the Big Island. So it definitely would qualify for an HSAC resolution, which I would have no problem. Once we get the proposals down and in place and we can get some sort of consensus, then I have no problem getting it in front of the HSAC.
Okay, Mel, I'm not sure how much time you've got. Can you take another call?
Yeah, sure.
That's awesome that you're here. Really appreciate you being on the air with us, Mel.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Go ahead.
I guess they couldn't wait around.
Okay, sorry. We're back. Now, Mel, you mentioned that the bill in front of you, 2491, conflicts with state law. And we can't have a conflict there. But does it really conflict with it, or does it add new provisions to it that aren't already in the pesticide laws on the state level?
Well, I would say it would add. But again, the state law requires that any additions, amendments, or changes to the state law would require certain things, one of them being the advisory committee that would need to go through. It would also mean a change in administrative rules. And that's what I'm saying. Using the county system or the county process to circumvent the state law, in my opinion, raises some serious legal issues.
Right. But this isn't changing the state law. It's just changing the Kauai County Code. And the other counties would have the option to do it themselves, or the state could have the option to do it themselves. This doesn't change anything in the state level, it seems.
Well, it does, because it would prohibit certain actions or require certain activities on Kauai that's not required by state law.
And that's
the problem. We have a state law.
County codes do that?
I'm sorry?
Don't all county codes do that?
That's a point.
The entire county, Kauai County Code is requirements on the county of Kauai that don't apply to the rest of the state.
Right, but it's laws or ordinances that the counties have been granted the authority to do, such as zoning, permitting, you know, buildings, planning. Those things have been, you know, directly passed down to the county. So the state law says the county shall create laws and rules and as it relates to zoning, shorelines, and so forth. That's not existent in the pesticide bill or in a pesticide law. So it's different. It's not the same thing.
I mean, is there something in the Hawaii revised statutes that precludes the county from doing that? I mean, that specifically says counties shall not write laws regarding pesticides.
No, it doesn't say that.
Okay. Hey, we have another call. Let me know if you're running out of time. I'm not sure how much time you've got.
I'm here as long as you guys are.
Okay. Let's try another phone call.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box. We're speaking with County Councilman Mel Raposo. Do you have a comment or question?
Yes. Mel, as someone who voted for you and kind of considered you to be someone who would be a bit of a maverick maybe and stand up to the powers that be, I got to say I'm a lot disappointed to hear you grasping at straws. This whole issue of preemption in the state, we spent I don't know how long in the hearing talking about this, and I thought by now it would be cleared up that there's really not preemption in the state law. I don't see how you can look at that and think it's preemptive. I mean, it doesn't say the county shall create these laws, but there's nothing in there that has the kind of scope that would imply that they don't want the county to make these kind of laws. So I think you really have to get deeper than that and, you know, look at what can we do as a county, because as you said, the state's not doing it. And I think petitioning the state is just going to be a long, long road to probably nowhere. If we don't take the initiative and show the state we need business, I don't think this is going anywhere good.
Do you have a question for Mel then, or you just want him to comment on that?
I'll take his response off the air.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, caller.
I guess my response would be, I would suggest you read 149A, because I think if you read the bill in its entirety, you'll see every section of the bill as it references the enforcement of regulation. They do not mention the county, unlike the other sections in HRS that does. So, I mean, again, it's a matter of perception. There's an interpretation. And, you know, I know many will disagree. I think the easiest thing for me to do right now is to just say, you know, let's pass the bill, because that's the popular thing to do. But I've never been that way, and I'm not going to start. And I know, you know what, this could very well cost me the election. I'm well aware of that. But it is what it is. And you know, I have taken the oath to do what I believe is right for the county and not put an extra burden on the taxpayers that's going to have to defend a lawsuit that I can see coming. And it's not about being afraid of a lawsuit. I'll give you two examples. The Ohana Tax Amendment and the TAU bill, both done by initiative on the election, on the ballot. Both of them, I felt, were illegal. I had no control. I mean, that's a county clerk function. It comes up. The attorneys, what we should have done was said no. But because the people didn't want to stand up to the public pressure and say, oh, you guys don't want to speak for the people, we want to put it on the ballot. Let's put it on the ballot. Sure enough, it went on the ballot, got challenged in court, and we lost both of them to the tune of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. I have a duty as well to the taxpayer. I have a duty to this county as well. And, you know, there's 7 of us there. You know, my position is just one. So, you know, the bill may pass. And granted, however the votes fall, they'll fall. But, you know, I got to do what I believe is best with the information and knowledge that I have. And, you know, we'll disagree, and that's fine. We can respectfully disagree. But, you know, to start talking about the kids, thinking of my kids, I mean, why in the world would I be against something that I believe is going to be healthy or safe? I mean, I want to do it in a way that's going to be legal, that we can defend, and we can get results. Not just so that I can put on my brochure, I passed 2491. That's a popular thing to do. I'm not there, and I'm sorry. And, you know, to all my supporters that have sent me emails saying they're not going to vote for me, you know what, I respect that. That's a Democratic process.
Well, there's no need for apologies, Mel. We invited you on because you are a straight shooter and you say exactly what you think and feel and don't use a lot of varnish on stuff. So that's the whole point of having a conversation.
Well, you know, again, and I would really recommend that people read the 149A, because I think that's where everyone should start. I mean, if you're talking about doing the research, you know, we get accused of not reading believe me, I've read majority of the emails and the studies that have come across, and there is no dispute about the danger of pesticides. There's no dispute of what pesticides do to people. There's absolutely no dispute, no disagreement there. My problem is just the vehicle, in my opinion, is the wrong one.
Right.
And that we can achieve the results and more. I think we can achieve more if we go the route of the state.
But you wouldn't be opposed to a two-track path forward, yeah?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to support the bill because I believe it's a flawed bill. I mean, obviously, if the bill passes, you know, I'm not going to sue the county and say, hey, that is a bad bill, don't do it. You know, I won't do that. I mean, it's going to happen. Whatever happens at the council level will happen. But that's not going to preclude me from doing what I plan on doing with the state to get these things done. Because, my goal is to get the results, is to get the amended rules. It's to get an inspector. You know, I offered to the governor, and I know I would have no problem getting the votes, to fund an inspector here on Kauai.
Well, let's make that happen, Mel, yeah?
Well, I mean, that can happen, but we got to change the rules first because we need to be able to go out there with some clear, defined rules as far as the disclosure, as far as, as the application. I mean, if you, 149A is very strict. If you read all of it, it says that the licenses can be revoked if they find traces of the pesticide in water, which has been done.
Right.
But the licenses have not been revoked. And I guess that's where I'm at. Okay, we're going to go out and try to recreate another law because we think the county can do better. Well, number one, I disagree. The county can do absolutely nothing better than what the state does. I mean, look at our TVR bill, Jonathan. That's a black and white bill. You either have a permit or you don't. And if you don't have a permit, you write a notice of violation. There's no testing of any chemicals. There's no soil samples. There's no coring of dirt. It's real simple. You go out there, you find if they don't have a permit, you issue a citation. We cannot even do that in this county. And this bill is not going to be the silver bullet that's going to make it all happen. It's going to turn everything around. And I think that's my frustration. Is I want to make sure disclosure happens.
Right.
244 is not going to make that happen, I can tell you. But the state requirement will. And if we can control the state inspector, which is a Kauai inspector, that's focused, the only function of that Kauai inspector would be to focus on the seed companies and the coffee company to make sure that everything is being done properly and to issue the notices of violations should violations occur and to notify the public. That's where I want to be.
Right. Mel, we do have another call, but I want to let you know, I just read 149A and I don't see what you're talking about. So I think I don't understand where you're coming from, but we do have another call. So do you want to take another call?
Sure.
Go ahead, Dave.
Hello.
Aloha. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Thank you. Is this me?
This is you, and we're speaking with guest Mel Raposo, County
Absolutely.
Councilman. You have a question or comment for him.
I do. Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Mel, and well, I guess so. I'm a local attorney, and I have read the bill, and I've read 149, and I've read the testimony submitted by some of the attorneys that wrote assessments of the bill. So that's just as background. And I just hear, like, Mel, that you've drawn a line in the sand and you've said, no, you're not going to vote for the bill. And I appreciate your candor, but I also would just ask that you stay open to receiving the information and the testimony and, base your decision on legal assessments and not on personal belief about what the law says. So one thing I wanted to point out is that the state attorney general, when they were asked to comment on the Big Island GMO bill, clearly said that they're not going to comment. And in that hearing, the county attorney for the Big Island said that he had been speaking with the county attorney for Kauai, and they both realized, that the state attorney is not going to comment on this bill. So I don't think that we can use that as a reason to, not act.
Like I said earlier, I wasn't relying on the county attorney's opinion or the attorney general, but I will say that the difference between the Big Island bill wasn't a pesticide bill, it was a GMO bill. And as far as the preemption issue, the federal law clearly preempts the states or the counties from regulating GMOs. That's done federally. So I can see the attorney general not responding to a GMO opinion, but I cannot see the attorney general not responding to a pesticide opinion because the pesticide bill is, or the pesticide law is a state law. So
yeah,
I'm awaiting to see Bill respond.
Yeah, I could see that would be a distinction. But, to that point with the 149A preemption, you know, I read the testimony from Center for Food Safety and Earth Justice, and, you know, they laid out very clearly that preemption under the state law is not at all a given, and that, you know, you mentioned that there's different attorneys on either side, and, you know, they both have a dog in the fight, and so you're talking to some more neutral attorneys. But for me, when I think about whose dog is in the fight for, you know, public interest attorney, they're in there looking out for the health and the safety of the people. Whereas the chemical company's attorneys are speaking about, you know, their financial interests. So
I just ask that
you give different weight to those different opinions.
I would definitely keep an open mind, and you know, if I find an opinion that I believe is accurate and gives a go ahead to pass this bill, I'll definitely support it.
Yeah, great.
But I mean, I can tell you, I pay no credence to those seed company attorneys. I mean, what they said, yeah, great to hear, but I'm not basing any votes on what they say. Because obviously they have a dog in a fight.
Yeah, got it. And I'm so glad to hear you're not afraid of taking on the fight. You're not afraid of being sued because, you know, if our government doesn't act because we're afraid of being sued, we're being held hostage by the threat of a lawsuit. And, you know, that's just corporate power gone way too far, in my opinion. So thank you again for your candor and for keeping an open mind and an open heart. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, Mel, I think that's all the time we've got for this issue, but we really do appreciate your calling in and sharing your thoughts with the community here. Do you have any closing comments or anything you want to say?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, there's 7 members on the council, and I think everybody on there does a great job with their research and their due diligence. And, you know, I think that, you know, I would ask that people give us the courtesy or the respect that, you know, we are trying to do what's right. And you know, we all want to get to the same place. And like I said, I think some of my proposals are even more strict than what's in the bill. But, you know, we have different methods of getting to where we want to be. I happen to believe that the path of least resistance is changing the already existing structure, simply with some administrative rule changes. Governor even offered to sign some executive orders to meet the needs of the Kauai community. We are trying to get him here as we speak. We're trying to get him to the island to make some visits throughout the site to the doctors and nurses at KVMH and the school teachers at Waimea Canyon. We're trying to get him here so he can hear their concerns. All in an attempt to make him understand that, you know, we're pleading for help and we need the help of the state. And if he can't get it done, believe me, I don't have a problem leading the charge, initiating a resolution to file a lawsuit against the state for not doing their job to protect our citizens. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Now, you say that your proposals are even stronger or meet a lot of these. Where can we find those?
Well, it's being drafted and being reviewed right now for the legal review portion that we got to follow. But, again, it does... It fits in with the state, with 49A. Those amendments are allowed. There's no legal challenge to them because it is part of the state's responsibility and enforcement and regulation. So that's why I believe that's the better way to go.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to seeing that hopefully soon.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. I think that'll be really helpful if you can get that in writing for folks to take a look at.
Well, good on you.
All right, hey, and happy birthday to you.
Okay, thank you all, and I appreciate the time.
All right, Anna, see you Sunday.
All right, Roger. I will be there in the afternoon.
All right, aloha.
Yeah, aloha.
That was Mel Raposo, county councilman, sitting on the subcommittee that Bill 2491 is presently in right now. And it was interesting to hear his views. Not the stuff I hear from folks I talk to every day, so I appreciate a difference of perspective.
Let's see, we've got a caller here. Caller, I don't know if you were...
Well, yeah, hi.
We've got somebody else calling in real quickly, so if you could just give us your brief comments, that'd be great.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Mel,
The thing is, if he doesn't, if he wants to get it stricter, why doesn't he amend what we have? And he said, his words were, why would I pass this bill? Well, it's a chance to get in the door is the reason we want. This thing's been going on and no one's ever called any attention to it like we have at this time. So if he doesn't like the bill, and this is the same thing I said to Joanne, please don't kill it. Amend it.
Make it stronger.
He said he has stronger positions. Why doesn't he propose those and amend this bill and vote for it so we can get in the door? That's what I don't understand. Why these guys just get their own idea of how they're going to do it and they're going to kill the whole thing with all this momentum that we're having, you know. So I just want to ask him, what would he do to amend it to be able to vote for it? And if he's listening on the radio, I would still ask him that question.
Well, it's a good question, and I'm sure that the people are asking him that.
Yeah, well, you know, I want all these council members with their, you know, egos and positions about their own way of doing it. Please climb on board, and if you don't like it, give us the feedback to amend it. Do not kill this bill. This is our first opportunity to actually address this issue and make these guys accountable. That's my comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hello? Hello, is this Paul?
Hello, no. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. One concern that Mel mentioned was compliance and enforcement. And he seems to believe that the state would be better at that, but I think that the state is pretty elusive and difficult to find when you need enforcement. There's just too much red tape, too much bureaucracy. And actually, this bill, after he said that, I started thinking about it. If it's on a county level, it will be more enforceable just by the mere fact that if it's passed, these companies have to comply with what the bill says.
Well, we're fortunate right now that we have Paul Achitoff on the other line from Earth Justice, and we're going to invite him to come in and speak directly to the points that you're raising right now.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Aloha, Paul.
Aloha.
All right. Finally, Aloha. We get you on.
Yeah, finally. Thanks so much for fighting your way through the phones there. I know it can get awfully thick.
Yeah, well, no problem. Glad to be here.
Well, Paul Achitoff is a magnum cum laude from Harvard and got his J.D. at Columbia Law School. Did 11 years of practice in L.A. and Honolulu before he came to Earth Justice in 94 and is now the managing attorney in the Hawaii office. So I want to thank you very much and welcome you to KKCR and coming on to Out of the Box. Really appreciate you being here this afternoon.
Thanks for inviting me.
So I don't know if you had a chance to listen to some of the comments that Councilman Raposo had to say about his concerns about jurisdiction. Could you speak to the issue of whether or not the county has jurisdiction in matters like 2491?
I actually did listen to everything that Councilman Raposo had to say on the subject, and I frankly don't see any basis for saying that the county doesn't have jurisdiction. The county, the law says very clearly that the county has the power to enact ordinances that it deems necessary to protect health, life, and property unless it conflicts with state law. I heard Councilmember Raposo suggest that there are somehow some sort of conflict or preemption with the state pesticide law 149A. But I've read that law inside and out. I've read every word of it, and I've read the rules as well. And I see no basis for saying that somehow that law precludes the county from supplementing it with its own ordinance that goes further or fills in gaps in the state law.
So as a layman, what I'm hearing you say is that's a big, fat green light.
Well, you know, people can argue law any way they please, but I'm just saying that my read of the law, and it's supported by analysis of the statute itself and looking at cases and the way these things have been decided in other states that have very similar laws, I see no obstacle to the county enacting an ordinance that regulates pesticide use in the way that 2491 does. Now, the industry is free to sue, and the courts will do what the courts will do, but I think to stop in your tracks and say, oh, no, no, we can't go near this, there's a state law, I just don't think that there's a basis for that.
So you'd say that's a false analysis?
Well, let's just say I don't agree with it.
Okay.
And I have given the county council about 30 pages of analysis of the ordinance, very specific, gone through the statutes, cited many cases, and been very specific in addressing legal issues relating to the ordinance. I have seen nothing, and I underscore nothing, from the industry attorneys that provides any kind of support for their claims that if they went to court, they would win. Now, there's nothing to stop them from going to court, but going to court and winning, of course, are two different things. And to me, it just seems like a bullying tactic. They're being, the attorneys are being paid by the companies to put the fear of a lawsuit into the council members, and they are dutifully doing that, but they are certainly not providing the council members with any meaningful legal analysis to support their claims.
They're just making assertions.
Well, they're barely even make. They're just saying, we're going to sue you and you're going to lose. And then when asked, well, okay, what in the law gives you that belief, you get nothing. And I mean nothing. And I sat there.
Isn't that curious, though? I mean, that just seems so empty. Why would they go through such an empty gesture?
Because they feel they can get, they may be able to get what they want, which is no ordinance, simply by threatening litigation and saying, well, you're going to lose, there's no point, or even if you win, it's going to cost you a lot of money, or whatever. I mean, that alone has, it's a strategy, and the corporations have used it before in other states. They have threatened states with litigation, and some states back down. And counties, it's the same thing. It's just a tactic, and some legislators will fold, and some of them will say, "Bring it on."
So it doesn't sound very different from like a poker game.
Well, I would say so. You're certainly not going to win if you don't play the game, and I think here you have very good arguments to support the legality of this ordinance. Whether a court would uphold the ordinance in every respect, no good lawyer is going to provide assurances that, yes, you're going to win everything, believe me. And I'm not going to do that either, but I am going to say there are very good arguments to support it, and I haven't seen any arguments on the other side.
So, and forgive me because I'm not a lawyer, but it sounds like you're saying, hey, let's call their bluff.
Well, I think clearly that's up to the county, and the council members have their own sense of responsibility, and I think certainly Council Member Raposo and all of the others that I've spoken with are taking their jobs very seriously, and I respect that. So I'm not trying to second-guess them. I'm only speaking to what I believe is the proper analysis of the law, and to the extent that they are basing their decision on concern that the ordinance will not withstand a legal challenge. And to that extent, I'm saying, sorry, but I disagree, and I have read the law, and I do have expertise in this area, and I don't think those concerns are very well founded.
Paul, quickly, you have offered your services to the county in the event of such a lawsuit. That's what I understand?
I have not offered to represent the county because I think that would create some difficulties, but I have said and that I would be interested in representing not the county, but going into court to defend the bill on behalf of appropriate community groups that want to defend the bill as an intervener if the county gets sued.
Okay, well, I guess there's a few different areas where help could be needed. One is drafting the bill now, because if there's changes that could be made to it now that could make it a stronger bill and withhold their legal challenges, that would be, there'd be value in that, I guess. And then also, if it doesn't pass, it may go forward as a citizens' initiative, in which case, lawyers should look at it to make sure it stands up and that it could, stand up to challenges later. And then, it may end up in court. So there's several different ways this could play out. Are you interested in helping in any or all of these?
Well, in terms of amending the ordinance, I would be happy to offer my help to, if I'm asked, to do that. I haven't been asked to do that, so, it's not up to me to offer amendments.
Right.
And if there's an initiative that needs to be drafted or something like that, yes, I'm committed to this issue because I think it's important and I think it's time. And I think that there's very good reason why all eyes are on Kauai. And I think we need to make a stand, and Kauai is the place to do it. I understand that it's very tough. I don't envy the job of the council members, but sometimes you have to step up to the plate, and I believe that at least in my capacity, I want to do that.
Is there any closing comments that you'd like to add, and just to give people some your perspective on where we stand right now?
Well, I think that, again, I want to keep my role in this within my area of expertise, which is the law. It's what I do, and I've looked at this, and I think that there is solid support. I think and I have made that analysis available to the council members. I think if a council member has political reasons for opposing the bill, that's their job, not mine, and I respect that. But if they're going to base it on a legal analysis, frankly, I think the people deserve to hear what that legal analysis is. Not in generalities like it's preempted, but in what way? Show us where you see preemption here. Because I've spelled out where I don't see preemption, but I haven't seen anybody else support their arguments about how preemption or any other legal problem exists. It's just rhetoric at this point.
Right.
And I asked the lawyer. Well, which lawyer? What did that lawyer say?
Right, yeah, he was vague on that. Well, thank you very much, Paul, for calling in. And sorry we couldn't spend nearly as much time as we had planned and had hoped. But we really do appreciate if we can get you back in on a future show.
Sure. My
All right.
pleasure.
Aloha. Okay, well, we're over time, and to thank the Acoustic Luau for allowing that, but it was pretty important. So we're going to bug out of here. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks, and Jimmy Trujillo will be back in the studio next week.
And I'll see anyone who's listening. I'll see you on Sunday at the big march, the big Mana March. So 11:30 for Pule at Vindina Stadium, and then we take off at noon and head to the county building. And should be a great day, rain or shine. So yeah. I'll see you there.
And then tomorrow, the movie War on Whistleblowers. Where is that, Jonathan?
It's going to be at the Kapa'a Library. That's at 6:30 at the Kapa'a Library.
Okay. Aloha, everybody.
Aloha. Ahui ho. Malama pono.